going on, everybody? It's your buddy, it's your pal, Smash Phoenix, the YWC Reality Check, and you do, in fact, see my pretty sexy face, so you know I am, in fact, alone. Gonna talk to you guys about a WWE pay-per-view that's coming up, which I don't do very often. I think the last WWE pay-per-view I previewed was WrestleMania, just because we were going into the weird, empty WrestleMania in the PC and all that sort of thing. Sorry, I'm out of breath. I'm doing this in the morning, which I don't usually do, so I'm kind of trying to keep my voice down, not wake up other people, and I don't think I've ever previewed a pay-per-view on the day before it's actually happened. I usually do it on the Thursday. I've usually got awesome co-hosts. Shout out to Guapo, shout out to Kristen, shout out to Jake DeMarco, and all that sort of thing. But I'm going to try to do this one on my own because, not because this is going to be a fantastic pay-per-view, but because this is a pay-per-view that I can look at and say, you know, main roster WWE is pretty shit. That's why I don't focus on it a whole lot. But there's a lot of stuff that's either interesting going into this pay-per-view because of who's involved, or interesting because of the conversations that it allows us to have, or interesting because it allows me to talk about other things, quite frankly. So I don't have a co-host. It's just me. You're stuck with me. If you don't want to look at me because I'm still wiping the sleep out of my eyes on Saturday morning, it's fine. Find me in an audio platform. Find me on, you know, Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, all those sorts of things by searching Spaz Phoenix Podcast. If you are listening there and you want to see what I look like first thing in the morning, come find me on YouTube at Spaz Phoenix. Find me on Twitter at Spaz Phoenix and at Spaz Phoenix 1. Find me on Instagram at Spaz Phoenix, and look for the Spaz Phoenix Facebook group on Facebook. Spaz Phoenix Podcast Facebook group. There we go. It's tired in here. Don't even have the right hat on. Like, it's all weird. It's all going wrong today, isn't it? But like I say, the show this Saturday, I'm not going to blow smoke up anybody's ass. I don't think this show is going to blow anybody away. I really don't. But on the other hand, there is a lot of interest. Like I say, there's a lot of interesting stuff going into it. If nothing else, I mean, you guys know I'm partial to NXT. That's why I spend most of my time talking about it. But if nothing else, this draws the big, huge line between how shit Raw is and how good SmackDown is getting, because you can pretty much draw a line down the center of, like, what matches are we actually interested in seeing. You know, I try to go from, like, the matches, you just get sound effects, because I'm tired, it's fine, from those matches to the ones that I'm actually interested in. So obviously we're going to start in the tag team division, and yes, let's just say it one more time for the AEW fans listening in the back. WWE's tag team division is in the shitter, not only because they don't have any tag teams, but because the few tag teams they do have, they're serially splitting tag teams. All the tag teams are splitting up, it's fine. But one team that's not splitting up, one team that's still a lot of fun, as long as one of their girlfriends stays out of the mix, is the Street Profits. And they're still the Raw Tag Team Champions. They're going up against Andrade and Angel Garza again. I mean, I know when me and Jake talked about NXT a little while ago, and we always used to say, oh, you know, Keith Lee versus Dominik Dijakovic, or T-Bar, as he's known now, and we're getting that match again, but we're getting this match again, and I get that. It does get a little bit of a pass from me because all four guys in the ring are amazing. Andrade has sure as hell has had a fall from grace from where he was in NXT, and considering Garza was the guy that took the Cruiserweight Championship off Lio Rush, you could say the same for him as well. But they're both amazing in the ring. They have, as you would expect, they have great chemistry with the Street Profits because they've fought so many times in so many different singles matches and different coordinations and multi-team matches, etc. They are the predictable losers going in only because they've lost and failed to get those titles so many times. Now, there's a thing going on in Twitter and in the fandom or whatever. Oh, WWE is telling a really bad story, a really sexist story. If they win these titles now, it's because, oh, they needed to get Zelina Vega out of the way. I don't necessarily think that's true, and I think there's a reverse of that story that we're going to talk about later on down the line. But I think it's just, in general, a matter of getting rid of distractions. I mean, obviously, Angel Garza is doing this Lothario character. For a while there, they had that chick from The Bachelor on the show, and he was just constantly trying to get her attention, and Zelina Vega and Andrade were trying to, you know, snap him out of it, get him back on task and whatever, and the ego took over. But both of them, if you remember the early days of this tag team, both of them were equally trying to impress Zelina Vega. So I don't think necessarily she was the problem, and I don't think that's the story being told, which is what's leading everybody to say that it's sexist. I think the story that's being told there is we've just gotten rid of the distractions so that they can not be idiots, pretty much, because they are great wrestlers, and we've seen that they can be great wrestlers. You know, Zelina Vega's not there, so they're not pining for her attention slash approval, and they've just gotten rid of the Bachelor chick, because apparently she's just not a thing. We imagined that. It's fine. You know, Simon Miller would say, Wizard in the sky, the Bachelor chick is out. So, not so much, oh, Zelina Vega was the problem and now we got rid of her, but Zelina Vega was the distraction that they made her into, and now they can get down to business. And I think that's really good. And obviously, I like both these guys. They're both cocky-ass heel characters, and they both like absolutely swim in arrogance. And I love characters like that. I really do. So, much as I like the Street Profits, I will not mind in the slightest, by the way, if the Street Profits retain their championships here, because I do like them as well. It's just, the Street Profits are one of the acts out there that is really, really, really not struggling, because they're a great team, but they're really, really hurt by the fact that there's no live crowd, because so much of their appeal is their interaction with the crowd, because the crowd genuinely loves them, and it's a good thing, and what I'm saying about them is a good thing. But when you get an act like that that gets along so well with the crowd when there is no crowd, even though there's screens in the Thunderdome, etc., it's missing, because they're playing to nobody. It's like when they first started doing things in the PC, and Miz and Morrison would constantly shout things out to the crowd that wasn't there. It's that kind of thing. I do like the thing that they do now with their entrance with the shower of red Solo cups. It's cheesy as hell, but it works. Andrade and Garza pick up the tag team titles here. It's not going to hurt the Street Profits. They can do whatever. I know there's people out there that think Montez Ford should go on a singles run, and I think that really fucks over Angelo Dawkins, if I'm honest. Angelo Dawkins, nothing wrong with him. He's the heavy of the team, which means he's not necessarily the more exciting member of the team. So if they split up, I think he's the one that's going to get fucked, if I'm honest. Andrade and Garza, for some reason, I'm picking them to win. They're the ones I want to win. It's just more of the same, and it becomes more and more and more pointless the more times Andrade and Garza go and try to get those titles and don't get them. Now, on the SmackDown side of things, I don't know, man. Shinsuke and Cesaro were a fun team, but they are a thrown-together tag team, and as was pointed out by the Street Profits, like, how many different tag team partners are we going to put with Cesaro? Because he had Tyson Kidd, he had Sheamus, was he with Curtis Axel at one point when they were both Heyman guys? And now he's got Shinsuke, and they're taking on the Lucha House Party, which I'll address in a second. I do like the fact that they don't ignore past storylines, and WWE is constantly, and this is where SmackDown is doing things a lot better, WWE is constantly accused of, like, being, like, fishbowl memory people, like, oh, if it happened last week, it doesn't matter anymore, they have short memories, they don't book long-term, and all that sort of thing. When Sami Zayn, who again we'll talk about later on, came back and tried to rejoin his group, they looked at him and they're like, no, man, like, we're succeeding without you. And he was, like, genuinely dejected from that group. But they did, when they brought Sami Zayn back, they didn't just forget that all of those guys were a team. They addressed it. They cut it. They brought an end to it. But they did address it when Sami Zayn came back, and he's like, and they were like, no, why would we need you? Like, you're the fake Intercontinental Champion. We're the actual SmackDown Tag Team Champions. Why would we need you? And if you're Shinsuke and Cesaro in a division that doesn't have much competition, let's be real, you wouldn't really think that you need any help. But they're taking on the Lucha House Party, and this is where my interest goes off a cliff. The Lucha House Party are all good enough. Kalisto, awesome on his own. I think it was a little bit much when they put the US title on him, I'm not going to lie. The other two were in the Cruiserweight Classic, and they've all been in the Cruiserweight division at some degree. I mean, there was a point where they were featured heavily on 205 Live, but then again, nobody watches 205 Live. And they're sowing dissension in the ranks because Kalisto just came back and he's been gone for a while. And the whole being gone for a while thing I'm gonna talk about when we talk about Sami Zayn. But they're like not getting along out of nowhere. They're gonna split up the Lucha House Party. And I'm sorry, all that's really gonna do is lead us to a bunch of Lucha House Party triple threats, which I'm sure will be great, but will run out their course pretty quickly, because I don't see any of them any of them, any whether it's Grand Metalik, Lindsay Dorado, or Kalisto having not necessarily a convincing story with anybody else, but a storyline that I'm going to care about, because it's a little bit of New Day syndrome, but worse. How long is it going to take for me to take any of these guys seriously? They're coming up with Noisemakers and Piñatas and that, you know, oh, we're just happy to be here feeling. They're going to have to do a lot to work against that, or one or a couple of them is going to have to be repackaged and all that sort of thing. So this is going to facilitate them breaking up, and I can see it from a mile off. And shrug. I should say, as well, when we talk about the Raw titles, how did Andrade and Garza get this shot? They were fighting each other, but they won a tag team title shot by beating Rollins and Murphy, who are fighting each other, and Humberto and Dominic Mysterio, which is just... Dominic Mysterio is on TV. Nothing against him, let me be clear. He's on TV way too much for as new as he is. And Humberto, who is great, is not on TV enough for me to give a shit. So three teams that were falling apart or shouldn't have worked in the first place, and like they were the least smelly turd in the punch bowl. Like, that's... It's not a good way to set up a title shot, is it? And Lucha House Party, I don't know why. I cannot recall why they got this title shot, other than they happen to be there. Now, speaking of things we've seen 100 times before, Lashley versus Apollo for the U.S. Championship. Now, first of all, the U.S. title, how can I say this? It seems like only certain superstars matter when it comes to the U.S. Championship, doesn't it? But anyways, I don't really know what to say, because Lashley's a big, powerful, athletic guy. Apollo's a big, powerful, athletic guy. We've seen versions of this match 100 times. I don't really want to talk about the match, because I think Lashley's going to retain. There's no reason for them to put it back on Apollo. They tried and nobody cared. What it does do is it allows me to expand out and talk about some other things. First of all, the Hurt Business is awesome. I've always liked MVP. I've always liked Cedric Alexander, who's like the newest member to that group. I've never really given a shit about Lashley, and in his first run in WWE, I thought they didn't use Shelton Benjamin nearly enough. Collectively, these guys have got some kind of chemistry, some kind of force. They portray themselves as a force on television, as a collective unit. Individually, I don't give a shit about any of them. MVP is awesome because he's great on the mic. He's great for, like, the stage he's at in life to still be able to do what he's doing is great when, obviously, other people in the business definitely can't do what he's doing now. He's great in the sense that he's using what credibility he has to put everybody around him over, both his partners and his opponents, which I think is not only great, but commendable on his part. It's a really good group, and it's to the point now where, coming up on Survivor Series in a couple months, I wouldn't mind seeing the Undisputed Era versus the Hurt Business as an exhibition match. I would be way more interested in that than when we got Worlds Collide, when it was Undisputed Era versus Imperium. I'm not going to lie. It's because they've been put out like that. I would love to see the promos between MVP and Adam Cole, for example. I would love to see a high-flying sort of match. We've seen what Roderick Strong and Cedric Alexander can do in a couple of, like, crossover shows that they were on. I mean, Fish and O'Reilly taking out everybody else in the middle. Fish and O'Reilly versus Lashley and Shelton Benjamin sounds funny, but it's not when you think about it. Her Business is great. They've also become the number one target of Retribution. T-Bar, Slapjack, Mace, and apparently Mia Yim's name is now Reckoning. So what the hell are they going to call Mercedes Martinez? Now, Retribution's shit, right? Like, it goes without saying at this point, Retribution is shit. Like, it's a bad gimmick. It's cheesy as hell. I'm also kind of here for it. I'm also kind of here for... You know, Raw and SmackDown aren't my thing. You guys know, as I mentioned at the beginning, a lot of my focus on this channel is on the movie stuff that I do. Most of my focus is on NXT because I've said before, that's kind of my brand. A bit of my focus is on AEW, especially when we get Guapo on here. Raw and SmackDown aren't my focus, so I'm a lot more forgiving with stuff, and I'm able to look at Raw with a feeling of, like, how much more ridiculous can it get? You know, with the coming out with the masks that don't fit, and Roderick Ready Raw. And as I said, we don't say it very often, but people coming up from NXT, and yes, if you're coming up from NXT, you wouldn't want this gimmick. If you're Keith Lee and you're getting treated like Keith Lee's being treated right now, and then you see your girlfriend being thrust into this, you're probably having a bad time. But out of all of them, I look at Dijak because, and I said it week after week after week after week after week on NXT, I don't give a shit about Dominik Dijakovic or Donovan Dijak or whatever we're calling these T-Bar now. It's fine. But I would rather, if they're not going to make me give a shit about him properly on NXT, I would love to at least get some entertainment out of him in the context of, oh my god, how much worse is this going to get? Like, morbid, like, driving by the car crash type of interest. I'll do that. Dio Madden, the last time we saw Dio Madden, he was a commentator, so anything he does at this point is at least worth a look. And he's the most intimidating-looking dude in the group. Mace is apparently Shane Thorne, which is kind of a bummer, because I did think they should have pushed Shane Thorne in NXT more. He could have gone for the North American Championship if they had pushed him properly. Retribution versus the Hurt Business is not a bad little extra thing to be hanging out on the edge of a card. And if we get to Survivor Series and it's them versus, you know, we're not going to have 5-on-5 matches at Survivor Series, I don't think, this year because of social distancing and COVID crap. So if it's just going to be 3-on-3, like we had on Monday Night Raw, but done properly and with an ending, will it be great? No. Will it be terrible, though? I don't think so. I got to re-underscore this so that people don't start unsubbing to the podcast. I'm not saying that Retribution is good. What I am saying is Retribution is ridiculous, and I'm on board for how much more ridiculous is it going to get. Hurt Business is genuinely great. Lashley versus Apollo, as a match, I feel bad for it because I'm sure it's going to be great in the ring, and I'm not going to care. And Retribution's probably going to get involved, so we're not getting a finish. Either way, Lashley's walking out with his title, isn't he? On the other side of the coin, contrast that with what's going on SmackDown, and how important does the Intercontinental Championship feel right now? It was held by Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn, I mean, in a 3-on-1 match, but Sami Zayn got the Intercontinental Championship off of Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman has been lost to the weeds of WWE writing at this point. He went away. They had to crown a new Intercontinental Champion. Eventually, it went to AJ Styles. AJ Styles lost it to Jeff Hardy. He injured Jeff Hardy, which put the knee brace on Jeff Hardy that Jeff Hardy used to win the match. So they are in dispute. Sami Zayn never lost his title. He's in dispute. Jeff Hardy, of all people, being like, this is fucking bullshit. Let's just have a ladder match. You can't get much better than this. I will say, genuinely, it's not going to be, but I wouldn't mind this being the main event because Sami Zayn's in it. And Sami Zayn is great. Sami Zayn in this new, like, SJW, I've been so wronged character that he's doing is awesome because it kind of mimics real life, does it not? AJ Styles being the entitled heel, but, like, almost the tweener, because even him and Jeff Hardy were able to agree that, like, fuck you, buddy, you weren't even here. So he's the heel, but even he's willing to agree with the babyface that the worst heel doesn't deserve to be in this match. And Jeff Hardy, whether you want to call it nostalgia, whether you want to call it sympathy, whether you want to call it me just being a mark, I will always defend Jeff Hardy. I will always back Jeff Hardy. I will always be interested in whatever Jeff Hardy is doing. There's my bias in a nutshell. Throw that in there with two other wrestlers that can help him out along the way, because he is older and he is beat up because of the type of matches that he's done. And much like Matt Hardy, he's not the Hardy that we knew, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But no wrestler that you know is the same wrestler they were, you know, 15, 10, 5 years ago. Ultimate example of that is The Undertaker. Be more careful. Pick people that can carry him through a match, like an AJ Styles in the Boneyard match, etc. It's fine. But if you've got two guys that I would say sort of at their peak in AJ Styles and Sami Zayn, they can definitely compensate for whatever little bits that Jeff Hardy is lacking. And Jesus Christ, I wish this match had a crowd. Ladder matches in a crowdless arena, even though, yes, there's fans on the screen, it's fine, we're piping in noise, it's fine. Not quite the same as you've noticed in everything. Look at AEW with the the rip-off Battle Royal ladder match that they did. Look at the ladder matches we've had on NXT. Look at the ladder match we had at WrestleMania, where three singles wrestlers fought over the tag team championships. It's going to be great because the people that are in it are great. The ingredients that are in it can't make a bad cake. How's that for a bad metaphor? But I really wish there was a crowd. And if that's not the anthem for 2020, I don't know what is. Honestly, I think Sami Zayn's going to win. I find it very interesting, and I'm glad I saw SmackDown before I did this review. I find it very interesting that they're hanging both belts. I made a joke on social media that, you know, Sami Zayn was going to pull down one, and AJ Styles was going to pull down one, and WWE was going to make history with the first ever Intercontinental Tag Team Championships. But we don't have a tag division. We don't need another set of tag team titles, so that doesn't need to happen either. There's a bit of me that wants Jeff Hardy to win the whole damn thing because I'm biased, but Sami Zayn, if you follow kayfabe, has the most legitimate claim to that title, because whoever won it after he went away is a paper champion. Whoever won it from them won a paper championship. So Styles was a paper champion because he won a tournament that didn't include the previous champion, and then Jeff Hardy beat him in questionable means. So they're both paper champion, paper challenger, all that kind of thing. There is a genuineness to all of it. There, you can make the CM Punk John Cena comparison where they held up their two belts. You can, again, look across to NXT to what I'm looking forward to, and that is, I'm hoping soon, the return of the actual Cruiserweight champion in Jordan Devlin, because he wasn't let go. I thought he was, which is really good. And we're either going to get him versus Escobar in a who can be a bigger dickhead match, or Escobar is going to lose it to Swerve, and we're going to get Swerve versus Devlin, which will be equally good. There's a lot of cool shit coming from these questionable champion type scenarios. Now, I'm going to say this for what it's worth: ambulance matches suck. We're getting Drew and Orton again. We're playing up the fact that they both have jaw injuries. We're playing up the fact that both of them have finishing maneuvers that affect the head and the jaw and whatever, and Keith Lee is sort of out there on the periphery. I don't care. The rumor going around is that going into Survivor Series, whoever wins this is going to take on Edge. Orton versus Edge we've done, and I'm sorry, Drew versus Edge, it would be a great match. There's something about it, though, that just makes me say no. I think their babyface promos going into it would be eerily similar and all that sort of thing. And if the two of these guys fight and the winner goes on to face Edge, why the hell did we get Keith Lee involved in this at all? Now, I will say, to counterbalance that, bringing Keith Lee to the main roster hasn't been handled very well, but also he shouldn't have been thrown right in the WWE Championship picture right away. Put him up again, it'll only underscore my point about the US title, but have him come down to the ring and pounce Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley versus with the right build and booking and people behind him and whatever versus Keith Lee would be an intriguing match. I would believe that Keith Lee was going to take that championship. I don't believe that Keith Lee is going to be the WWE championship. They gave him shitty music. They made him put a shirt on because Vince thinks he's fat. They've done every single foot wrong with Keith Lee and the way they brought him up. And he's such an outsider. He's such an outsider to this situation. He could slot into any other situation possible. Have him, I don't know, I know Cesaro's a tag team champion right now, but have him go target Cesaro. Have him go out there and be like, you know what, there's no tag team division right now anyway. I'll pick anybody, and he brings out some goober. Heath Slater comes back for a night. He's like, look, I can win the tag team titles with Heath Slater. Let's go. And then he pounces everybody, and it's fine. But they didn't do him any favors by putting him up there immediately with Drew and with Orton. I mean, I genuinely don't know. If the winner is facing Edge, I don't want either of them to win. And that's terrible, because I love Edge. I love the fact that he's back, but I want Edge to face somebody new. He's done the Orton thing. It was the longest, most torturous part of WrestleMania, I'm sad to say. And Drew versus Edge, one of them would have to turn heel. And here's the deal. Drew has been cooking up this great babyface champion, fighting champion character, and Edge isn't going to get booed by anybody, whether it's on a virtual screen or in front of an actual audience, so I don't think that works either. We can't win with this match. I'm going to guess that Drew wins. I mean, they're playing up his jaw injury a bit more, building him up some sympathy, etc. But the ambulance match is it's the lame man's version of a casket match, and even casket matches run the risk of being what the fuck a little bit, do they not? Now, what do I talk about most on this channel, as long as we're talking about wrestling? I do love to talk about WWE's women's division and what they're doing and how they're doing all these things right. I'm going to talk about three women's title matches in a row where I don't think any titles are changing hands, but all the challengers make me happy. All the challengers are people that are either sort of written off as possibilities or, in some cases, haven't had any exposure at all on a pay-per-view stage, and I think that's awesome. Do I think they're going to win? No. Because there's way too many other things going on. But it is good. It is a baby step where I think we should already be running a marathon. Let's go for the women's tag team titles first. You'd be surprised to hear that I actually don't mind the team of Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax. Shayna Baszler's awesome. It's good. It's awesome to see her with any gold over her shoulder. It should be the Raw title, but whatever. Nia Jax, as a tag team partner, is only in the match for limited amounts of time. So, A, limits her chance to hurt anybody, and B, she just has to come in and act like the heavy, not carry the weight of a whole interesting match. And I think that's, if you have to use her, if you absolutely feel the need to put Nia Jax on your TV screen as part of your wrestling show, that's an okay spot for her to be in. She is just playing the heavy. She is playing the diesel to Shayna Baszler's Shawn Michaels. And there's a sentence I never thought you would hear me say in a million. They're taking on the Riot Squad, and I fucking love I love Ruby Riot, specifically, because she's another one like Nikki Cross, like Alexa Bliss. She was brought up to the main roster before she ever had a proper crack at that women's tag team, or that women's NXT championship, and I will always begrudge NXT for letting go of their women to the main roster before they get that title, because Alexa Bliss isn't going back to NXT to get a title shot. Nikki Cross isn't going back to NXT to get a women's title shot, and neither is Ruby Riott. Liv Morgan's a little bit different. I wouldn't have seen her as champion anyway. She fits a tag team division more, and that doesn't mean that I don't like her, because I do. It's just different people fit in different spots. Kofi Kingston fans need to realize that a lot. But they're good. They're fun. They're friends. They've done the whole break up and reconcile and all that sort of thing. Now they plowed through that story, and I won't pretend that story was any good at all. But you can tell that they're genuinely friends. You can tell that they're missing, because they do drop little hints every now and then about Sarah Logan, who was the third member of their team, who's not in the WWE anymore. But she's off having a baby and hunting things. So congratulations to her. And what's his name? Eric from the Viking Raiders. Side note, follow Sarah Logan on social media and see how people just give her shit every day because she's a hunter. Fuck off. Absolutely fuck off. Moving on. Anyways, and they're having a kid, so good for them. But I do hope when the Rona season is over and we can sort of start slowly bringing people back and expanding stuff out and whatever, I do hope we get a return from her, whether she rejoins the Riot Squad or whether she just comes out and does her own thing. But Riot Squad are the only ones that I think have a slight chance of winning their tag team title match, because obviously there is dissension between Nia Jax, Shayna Baszler. If they knew what they were doing at all, they would have the Riot Squad win. They would have this, so even more dissension between Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax. They would have finally have Shayna put away Nia Jax in a number one contenders match, and towards a bigger pay-per-view, you get Shayna Baszler versus Asuka. That's what you should do. I don't think that's what they're going to do, if you ask me. Now, speaking of the Raw Women's Championship, we got Asuka versus Zelina Vega. And I don't want to retread territory that I already tread on my NXT review, but I'm going to do it anyway. People are losing their shit that this match got moved to the kickoff. Normally, I would agree with you. You guys know my big thing in NXT right now is if you put a Cruiserweight Championship match on a takeover, which I hope they are doing next weekend, we can talk about that when we talk about it, don't put it on the kickoff, because that title lived on the kickoff when it was the purple grapefruit roll-up Raw SmackDown title. It's very, very different here. If you see how well, even if you don't like all the characters, if you see how well the women's division in general is held, from having major feuds to being in major spotlights on pay-per-views to sometimes main eventing pay-per-views from NXT to Raw to SmackDown, it doesn't have the same thing. this title being relegated to the kickoff one time in I don't know how long is not the same as the case that I make for the Cruiserweight belt. Because when I talk about the Cruiserweight Championship not being on the main card, I'm not even sitting here saying, oh, why'd you put Santos Escobar on the kickoff? I'm not even saying, oh, why'd you put Swerve on the kickoff? I'm saying that title needs to be shown as a pay-per-view worthy thing at least once. If they do it once, I'll get off the hump, and if they put it on the kickoff the next time, I'll be fine. Because you did it once. The last time they made that title part of a real show was at Worlds Collide, when Jordan Devlin won it from... Oh, who was in that match? Because it was Swerve, it was Garza, it was obviously Devlin, and it was Travis Banks, the only Banks in WWE that matters. Oh, yes. But that was the only time, and that wasn't a proper takeover. That was a Worlds Collide sort of attraction show that was really, really good, and more people should go back and check it out because it was a lot of fun. This here, with Asuka and Zelina Vega being on the kickoff, is not the punch in the gut that you all think it is. Should it be on the show? Should everything be on the show? Should all titles always be on the show? Yes, okay, fine, cool. But this isn't a slight on Asuka. This isn't a slight on the WWE Women's Championship. This is purely reflective of the challenger. And I love Zelina Vega. I really do. Go back, I've said this for a while now, go back to Worlds Collide when it was a little mini event, when she had her triple threat match with Piper Niven and Bianca Belair. Piper Niven, who's also awesome, who I talked about in my NXT UK review this week that you guys are going to see on Monday, and Bianca Belair, who's also there. Zelina Vega is better than anybody gives her credit for. Is she a polished finish item? Absolutely not. But in the storyline, in the current context that we're in, she's getting a title shot that she doesn't really deserve, and she's outed herself as an actual in-ring competitor for about 2 weeks. That is what is reflected in her title match being on the kickoff, because it's not going to be anything. She's going to get in there, Asuka's going to carry her a little bit, she's going to show a little bit about what she can do, and then she's going to be knocked down to the bottom of the division and work her way up again. That's how I would do it. That's how I think WWE's going to do it. This being on the kickoff, it makes more sense than anything else, is what I'll say. The Raw... Okay. I'm gonna change my mind in mid-thought here. You could have put either tag team title on the kickoff. I'll give you that. But this is not reflective of Asuka. This is not reflective of the women's division as a whole. This is not reflective of the Raw Women's Championship as a whole. This move is purely reflective of who the challenger is. And I'm going to say that I buy that, even though I like Zelina Vega. So take that for what you will. The match is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to see what Zelina Vega can do. And here's where I come to the opposite end of that argument we said about Andrade and Garza a little while ago. If it's wrong to say, oh, Andrade and Garza are suddenly good because they finally got that woman off their back, and this big sexist, you know, diatribe that isn't actually happening, that people are making up, is it not the same to say that Zelina Vega got all those boys out of her way and finally got a women's title match? Nobody's going to tell that narrative, even though both of those narratives are happening simultaneously. And that's where the problem is in general society, on Twitter, and in the wrestling fandom in general, is you'll only ever make that one way. It's like arguing stupid matches between AEW and NXT. You know, it's stupid to run somebody over with a tank, but it's absolutely awesome to go swimming in fake orange juice. It's that type of argument. No shot at Jericho. Jericho's fine. It's all good. And even Cassidy is all right, I suppose. Now, what's going to be the main event women's match on this card now? Whether that's the actual main event, I doubt. The most important and the most focus of the women's division is going to be put on the SmackDown Women's Championship. Obviously, with Bayley and Bayley and Nikki Cross. Nikki Cross, like Zelina Vega, like the Riot Squad, are people that have hovered around these titles for a long time. Either been a contender and never become a champion, or been in the corner of somebody that was a contender, or been in the corner of somebody that was a champion, or just sat out there on the periphery. But I love the way they've built this up this time. Nikki Cross, you know, standing up for herself, being a little bit more psycho, sort of distancing herself from the cutesy stuff that she was doing with Alexa Bliss while still being her friend. Going back even more to the crazy Nikki Cross that we had in NXT. And I know, again, I'm going to say, I've even heard it from podcasts that I listen to, you know, that it's really played out that, oh, she's a woman, so she's crazy. No, they're not playing it off like she's a woman, so she's crazy. She's crazy, so she's crazy. And it worked, and she plays it really well. She plays off the crazy, like, off the hinges, you know, bouncing off the walls character in the ring better than she does on a mic. I will say, I love Nikki Cross. She's not always that great on the mic. In the ring, though, she's got all the facial expression and all the actions and all the body language of this crazy character that she's putting out. And she is played off of genuinely by people like Bliss, by people like Bayley, by the people that she's in the ring with, as being this crazy person where you do kind of flinch and you do kind of back up a second when you see her, no pun intended, spazzing out. There's a lot going into this. I mean, Sasha Banks is going to be involved in this, isn't she? Because of course she is, because she has to be involved in this. Also, because she's going to be in a show that I really like and probably ruin it. And do you know how she got on that show? I'm going to reenact to you how she got on there. Vince McMahon went to Jon Favreau and said, "Hey, buddy, your name's John. You must be a good guy. I like guys named John. Check this one out. She sucks such good dick." And now they've got a good relationship between WWE and Lucasfilms. Why are we beeping? Why is this a thing? In all seriousness, I hate that she's going to be in The Mandalorian because I hate Sasha Banks. And I hate that Sasha Banks is going to loom over this match more than the champion or the challenger. That's fucking bullshit. If I'm wrong, call me out on it. If I'm wrong, at me on Twitter, at SpazPhoenix or at SpazPhoenix1 or both. But Sasha Banks is going to be the looming over factor in all of this. And this is why you can't grow, you know, talk about, oh, WWE can't grow new talent. Okay, well, you did Asuka versus Zelina. Zelina's a new talent to the main roster. Well, she's not good enough for Asuka. Okay, well, fine. Bayley versus Cross. Well, Cross, you know, she doesn't matter because the real story is Banks. Well, Banks isn't in the match, so why don't you let the fucking match happen? That's what's going to happen. Also, Alexa Bliss is going to get involved in some way, shape, or form, not to take attention away from her friend or her opponent, but just to continue this fiend thing that she's got going on. The absolute fucking, like, horror movie style possession shit that was going on last night's SmackDown. I don't care. It's like me liking Retribution. I love shit like this. It's like, you know, Undertaker on like zip cords flying up into the rafters with wings. I love shit like that. This whole fiend possession thing with Alexa Bliss, yes, I'm biased because I do like The Fiend and I do like Alexa Bliss, and the two of them together work fucking amazing together. And the fact that she looks like the living embodiment of a Chucky doll at this point is fucking great. Is she gonna probably do something and cost her friend the title accidentally? Maybe. Is she gonna channel The Fiend and put the Sister Abigail on Bayley so the Cross can have the win? I would love to see that. I would love to see that. And everybody says, well, the championship has to stay on Bayley so that the championship can be involved in the Banks and Bayley match. I call bullshit on that. I really do. Because as much as I hate it, as much as I don't get it, as much as it's blown way out of proportion, the Bayley-Banks thing, people are going to love whether there's a title involved or not. So why don't you share some of the focus around? I know Banks doesn't like that. Share some of the focus around. Let their match just be their match with the prestige that people think it has. And let, you know, this new psycho version of, like, Blister Abigail take on Nikki Cross for the title, and you've got two women's matches that you can now market for the next pay-per-view instead of one. It makes a fuck ton more sense, does it not? But yeah, so there's all kinds of outside shit going on here. Banks is gonna Banks, and I roll my eyes. The Bliss thing is a lot more intriguing, I'm not gonna lie. Bayley actually turning and putting the beat down on Sasha Banks was just good. It was one of those not all heroes wear capes moments, and the fact that she was going to do it again at the PC was even better. I'm not all of a sudden saying because you beat up Sasha Banks, I like the character. I still think she's a bit tryhard. I think she's a bit tryhard in the heel role. I think she's very much doing the, this is what a heel sounds like. This is what a heel sounds like in her promos, but it is getting better, and the beatdown that she put on Sasha Banks was just so fucking good. And the built-in story here, and I think they've gotten around something really nicely, is yes, Bayley has always defeated Nikki Cross, but Bayley has also always had Sasha Banks in her corner. So yes, they've gotten around the fact that this is a repeat match by showing how different the dynamic is now. Bayley, ultimately, is the underdog in this match, even though she's the champion, because she's got to worry about her opponent. She's got to worry about the fact that her opponent has a possessed sidekick, and she's got to worry about her own ex-partner coming back to get revenge as well. So they won't play it up this way because Bayley's the heel. But if Bayley wins here, she's basically won a handicap match. And that is a story I don't think they're going to play out at all, which is really, really bad, because she's not doing perfect, but she's doing a lot of really good things. There's three people that I'm really intrigued by in this match, and the one looming over all of it is Sasha Banks, because they wrote her off with an injury so that she can go take another 6 months off, so that she can ruin an entirely other show, but yet she still needs to be looming over this match, and that's just a little bit sad, isn't it? Now, the main event, or what I'm going to say better be the main event, Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso. Now, Roman Reigns is heel. That's kind of cool. Roman Reigns is with Paul Heyman. That's kind of cool. Both of those things were things that people have put out there in the past. Roman Reigns can't talk. Why don't you put a mouthpiece with him? Cool. Roman Reigns and his family have a lot of history with Paul Heyman. Why don't you put him with Paul Heyman? Cool. Roman Reigns is the next John Cena. He's never going to turn heel. And he did. He did it at a time where I don't think anybody's going to boo him. A, because he just got over cancer. B, because he had to step away because of Corona. C, because him turning heel is what we wanted him to do. So nobody's going to boo Roman Reigns, so it's almost the opposite of the problem we had before, where they were trying to push a face that nobody would cheer. Now you've got a heel that nobody's going to boo. But it's been great, and he's been serious, and the teeth thing, I know it's weird, but I don't care. It reminds me of the episode of Family Guy where Brian has to go get fake teeth, and because his teeth are so nice, he becomes a house salesman a little bit. But they're circumventing like every single trope that you would want to do. He hasn't really done the, well, I don't owe you fans anything, and rah, 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 like the typical, like, just after a heel turn, heel promo. He hasn't really done that. He's sort of raging at the company for using him, which is an interesting take, because I think that's a take that everybody has right now, whether you're worried about the wrestlers that are wrestling right now, whether you're upset with the company about what happened back on Black Wednesday and all that sort of thing. So even his heel promos are something you can get on board with as fans and whatnot. But the other thing is, too, is, oh, put Paul Heyman with him because he needs a mouthpiece. The amount of times that Paul Heyman has gone to do his typical shtick and Roman Reigns has grabbed the mic from him, to almost, like, there's that narrative that he needed a mouthpiece, so we put him with Paul Heyman. The way he's grabbing that mic from Paul Heyman so much, he's almost grabbing that narrative back in his favor. And I really, just for how unexpected it is, I really have to take my hat off to Roman Reigns. And I didn't think I would be at this point with Roman Reigns ever. I don't think any of us thought we were going to be at this point with Roman Reigns ever. But it's really, really cool that it, once again, it goes to the Raw versus SmackDown thing. I mean, the tag team championship situations are pretty equal, but the IC title is way more interesting than the US title. The Universal title is way more interesting than the WWE title. The SmackDown women's title, even though I can't stand Banks and how she's going to sort of hover over it all, is way more interesting than the one-off match between Asuka and Zelina Vega. The women's tag doesn't really count because that's a title that carries over both shows. This just draws the underline under SmackDown is better than Raw. And I know I'm saying what a lot of people have been saying for a while, but I haven't come up here for a while to talk to you guys about the main roster because I don't do it a lot. But Roman Reigns, the way he's carrying himself, the way Paul Heyman is sort of taking a back seat to this character. Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar is a match made in heaven. Because, you know, he's the salesman and he's selling you a product, and that product is Brock Lesnar. But Paul Heyman is very much in the driver's seat, and his commodity is Brock Lesnar. Whereas that has been completely flipped on its head, and he is sitting in the back seat while Roman Reigns drives this narrative. And I think, if nothing else, for Paul Heyman to be in such a different position at this point is such a cool thing, and only underlines all the good shit that Roman's doing. Now, on the other side of the coin is Jey Uso, who the hell thought Jey Uso would be in this spot in 2020? The fact that, again, Roman Reigns is doing this thing where he pulls him closer with one hand but pushes him away with the other. The condescending promo that he cut last night, and I'm doing this mostly off memory, last night. It's so, like, you're my family and I love you, but just remember that I'm better than you. It was so good. The way they had the video package of all the of his dad and Rikishi talking about Jey Uso and the familial lineage, which is the easiest road to go down for WWE because it's all right there. They don't have to write anything. They don't have to make anything up. They just go to Roman and be like, hey, do you have some pictures from when you guys were kids? And it's all good. He cuts this big promo and he's like, look, you know, you're gonna come in on Sunday, you're gonna take this ass beating that I'm gonna give you, you're gonna take this payday that me and Paul got for you, and then we're all gonna go out for a drink afterwards. And if I go to the closing moments of SmackDown last week, and Roman Reigns thinks he's said his piece, thinks the conversation is over, gets halfway up the ramp, and it was so quiet. It was really, really so quiet when Jey Uso picked up the microphone and said, yeah, but what if you're wrong? Why can't it be me? Why can't it be me that represents our whole family? Why can't it be me bringing home the championship purse to my wife, to my kids who are your nephews? Why can't it be me at the head of the table? Why can't it be me? Why do you think it's always going to be you? Because Roman says, well, you know, you can do what you want, but it's always going to be me. And then he went on this tangent, and it was like, I don't want to oversell it, right? But like, when things get really, really real, they're like, I don't want to go down the cheesy route of like wrestling can make you feel things, because wrestling definitely can make you feel things. And if anybody tells you anything else, then they're not watching wrestling properly. But he goes down this whole like, why couldn't it be me? You know, I'm gonna show you some things on Sunday. Like, I can be the one at the head of the table. I can bring that winning purse down to my wife and your nephews. I can be the one out there making the family proud. I can be the one to put that weight and this company and this show on my shoulders. And then he went off and, you know what I've been dealing with my whole life? Which one are you? And he plays off just enough. He plays off that being stuck in a tag team, being stuck in a team with his brother who's a twin or whatever. So he didn't even get to be himself when he says, oh, all my life, all I've heard is which one are you? And then he says, they're not going to be asking which one I am if I take that belt off you on Sunday. And it's so fucking good. And I hesitate to say this because we just had the tragic passing of Chadwick Boseman. So any reference to Black Panther feels really awkward right now. But in that last moment, that like, why not me? Why couldn't it be me? What makes you think that I can't be where you are? It was Killmonger. It was Michael B. Jordan's Killmonger from Black Panther. Because he's absolutely right. I personally have said, I know that, because it makes me as a fan feel bad now, because I've done it in covering Uso matches. It's like, oh, well, one of them got a tag and the other one got the pin and, you know, they're twins, whatever. Like, to reach down into that and play on that, play on the whole idea of being stuck in a tag team, play on, you know, always being stuck under Roman Reigns' thumb. I'm surprised they didn't make some kind of reference to all of them being in the shadow of The Rock, because that would be a little bit too real and it would be something that both of them could say equally. But it was really, really good, and I never in a million years thought that they would push one of the Usos because they are so known as a tag team. I don't know where Jimmy Uso is. Does anybody know? Has he got the COVID? Is he injured, or is he doing something at home, with Naomi or something? I don't know why Jimmy's not on TV. I never thought they would push one of the Usos. Go back on my videos. I don't think it'll be available in podcast form. I fantasy booked one of the Usos becoming a world champion. I don't remember whether it was Universal or WWE or whatever. I fantasy booked one of the Usos becoming a champion because I thought the idea was so out there and so ridiculous, and I really just wanted to take a shot at Naomi, if I'm honest. But I never thought that this would actually happen. I'm so happy that this is actually happening that there's a little bit of me that's going to be real sad if he doesn't win on Sunday, but at the same time, I know he's not going to win on Sunday. But the other side of the coin as well, where the credit has to equally go, is I never, ever thought that I would be this into a Roman Reigns world title match. Ever. I still say, as a whole, over all three brands, over the whole company, the best thing that they are doing in the company is how they're treating the women's division. At various points and various degrees, they've got five women's titles that I'm all interested in one point or another. Just this past Thursday, we saw a great match that I encourage you to go watch between Kaylee Ray and Piper Niven for the NXT UK Women's Championship. It's really good. The title situation going forward into TakeOver is, Candice LeRae versus Io Shirai. That's going to be great. We got Bayley and Cross, which is interesting. We got the tag team situation, which is a bit of a mess, but it's still fine. You got Asuka giving Zelina Vega a shot. It's all great. So across the board, I think the women's division is the best thing going on in WWE. But if you want to talk about one specific scenario, what one specific thing, what one specific story, what one specific title storyline is the best thing going, surprise, surprise, go back 7 months and tell yourself this, that the best single story going on in WWE right now is a world title match between a heel Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. That's fucking phenomenal. In a show where I could pretty much pick apart something about every other match on this card, I'm looking most forward to this. And it's the most predictable match on the card too. So what does that say? Anyways, it's been a long time since I've come up here and just talked to you guys one-on-one about what's going on the main roster. I think I've gotten through a lot of different points that I wanted to make. I'm going to go back to the typical NXT, AEW movie stuff with Kristen content that you guys are used to, but I wanted to get this out of here because, yeah, it's a really, really silly pay-per-view on a lot of levels, but I think we're going to get more good out of it than we think we are. That's it. That's all I've got. I'd really love to know what you think. Put it down in the box below. I've been Spaz, your YWC Reality Check. Subscribe up there. Talk down there. Start a conversation. Keep all these conversations going. Don't be a stranger. I will talk to each and every last one.